Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 539 for Tuesday, December 27th, 2016. The year's best. Hello, everybody. I hope you had a great holiday. Happy New Year. You see, I'm dressed already for the party. And today we have a very special MacBreak. Some of the highlights of the year 2016. And a lot of you submitted some great ideas, and I thank you. And we have some wonderful, wonderful shows. We're going to do this kind of in chronological order, starting early in the year with, I think, probably the biggest story of the year from an Apple point of view. By the way, I kind of lost track of time. This was in March. We talked about the Apple versus the Department of Justice and why protecting the privacy of your iPhone is so very important. Watch.
Now, I have to say, I understand what the president is saying. Why should you have anything that with a duly appointed subpoena or warrant from a law enforcement and a court? Why should you have anything that can't be searched? The only thing we have right now that can't be searched is our brains. They've carved that out. By the way, that's only by precedent. They've carved that out.
Well, and that's, you know, there are, I mean,
Fifth Amendment.
One can argue that is a fuzzy area. They can't prosecute you against a polygraph, but they oftentimes will ask for one, you know,
Well, they would like to break it. If they could break into our brains reliably, don't you think that would be the next thing?
They're less than a decade away.
Right.
You know, so they're less than a decade away, and some would argue that they're less than a couple years away. To being able to have a pretty good idea of what you're thinking, maybe not be able to get it verbatim, but have enough information to really very cleanly know whether you're telling the truth or not. Much more accurate than a polygraph. So the issue thing I think that you get into is that there's this connection between our phone and us is so much different than anything that's ever been there before. You know, it's more than your diary, you know, if you keep one, because it's just so, you know, so much of what you do that's in there. And I think that's the thing that makes this
not even that
more complicated than a warrant.
The reason why law enforcement wants in here is it has a GPS, a microphone, and a camera.
Well, I said, I mean, all of these things. It's so
we don't need to tail you anymore because we know exactly where
you are.
We
can just turn on your microphone.
We don't need to bug you anymore because you're carrying a bug. How nice of you.
And we have a warrant. We can just have Apple flip that switch and your phone is live.
So in one way, I think one argument, if I'm the president, one argument I would make is, well, if you choose to carry a surveillance device in your pocket, that's your choice. And as law enforcement, if we are with probable cause and court order investigating a crime, shouldn't we have access to that surveillance device you choose to carry in your pocket?
Well, my thing is, like Slayton said, propose that law, pass that law, and then have someone and then that law can be challenged constitutionally. But there's been no process.
Right.
Like with a lot of things recently, the rush to get what they want is superseding the due process.
I'm going to beg to differ. I think this is very deliberate and premeditated, and they finally came up with a strategy that I think is like a good move.
Yeah, because we know that Apple was working with them since the fall, right, in private. Why all of a sudden
years.
Then you...
Not just since the fall, for years.
For years, but even, well, since the fall with the San Bernardino case specifically, right? In early December. And so we knew that they were giving them information. They had given them all sorts of data related to that case, all kinds of backups related to that case. And then suddenly the FBI goes public with this.
This is a boon for law enforcement because I have already in my house Amazon Echoes, Xbox One, and a Samsung TV, all of which have microphones and are connected to the internet. And if they can get the right to ask any tech company for special, you know, for firmware that has a law enforcement backdoor in it, they can. There's nowhere I have that I could be private. Nowhere.
Right. What about your Canary or your Nest?
Right.
Having access to the camera drop.
I think this is what happened: is law enforcement scratched their head and said, you know what? This is what do we need? What would be the perfect solution? Oh. Just a law that's a CALEA for digital technology. CALEA says that telecom companies have to assist law enforcement. What we need is a CALEA for digital technology that says you have to assist law enforcement.
And I think everyone saw it, but last week there was also, I forget the details of it, but they were basically making it overt policy that NSA could pass along the information they collect to local law enforcement.
Isn't that amazing?
As well.
Jesus.
Sorry
to swear, but this deserves it. That's horrific.
Well, and I think that they're clear that Congress has no appetite for this. After SOPA and PIPA, Congress has no appetite
they've
in going
tried
down
to
this path.
Make a CALEA too before, and they've turned away everything.
And they can't. Congress doesn't want to play this. I mean, this is not. It's not.
They don't now. And this is where Tim Cook's genius was, because until Tim Cook said no, this wasn't in the public awareness. It is now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think we can fully expect it to be more in the public awareness on Monday when Apple comes up. 15 minutes is my guess.
They're going to spend time on
this.
It's
going to be dedicated.
Yeah.
During that event, the day before that the day before they have to defend it, they're going to make their case in front of millions of people watching that live feed and all the press that it's going to get. And I think that they're going to keep on pushing this down the path. And I think that it is going to make any kind of the issue is that the people who understand what the danger is, they are very active, and then the rest of the population kind of doesn't understand it. And it's not a huge, it's not as important to them as taxes or law and order or a general law and order or abortion or whatever those things are. They're much more committed to that than whether their phone's encrypted or not. And so it makes it very unpalatable for Congress to go down that path. So this is kind of a Hail Mary, because I think that the law enforcement has decided that they can't win in Congress. And so there's no reason to wait for that or try to push that down the path. This is their chance. And they know, I mean, the risk that they have is they lose this in the Supreme Court, it's over. It will shut. Because now they've created a space race. I mean, you've got Facebook, Google, all these companies are now ramping up for encryption. If the FBI loses this case, and why it's kind of dangerous for them to go down this path, if they lose this case, the entire communication industry will be locked out for them.
Well, it's interesting because it's the way you ask the question, right, in polls. Do you want terrorists to be able to keep their data private in an investigation? No, of course not. Oh, okay. Do you want the government to know exactly where your kids are located and your health records made public and the government to have access to your private photos, emails, information, health data, et cetera? Oh, hell no. I don't want that. So it's this split between what you were talking about earlier, this idea that, we want law enforcement, right? We want these protections, the rule of law. But do you want an armored Humvee at a pumpkin festival in New Hampshire for Mildred's Pumpkin Festival and tanks that are rolling in to protect us against the off chance that someone is going to bring a bomb to Mildred's pumpkin festival in the fall? And you're seeing this.
We're getting close to that, by the way.
Well, it's every sci-fi movie.
If there were enough Humvees, I think there would be.
This is every every dystopian future movie that we watched. Right. And these are the bad guys from those movies, and the classic arguments every time. And it's not a movie now. It's real life. And we sort of didn't learn these lessons.
I don't want to. Yeah. And again, and I often say this, I don't want to get in an argument against government. That's an argument that could be had. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be had. But that's a separate argument than whether in a nation of laws, there should be a law preventing encryption. And what would be the I think the real question, and Tim Cook has brought this up, and it's very smart of him, and this is where Apple should hit. What would be the consequences of such a law? Would it in fact improve our safety or not? And I think it's so clear that it would not, and the history is there that it would not, that's the point Apple needs to continue to hammer home. I suspect they will on Monday. Hey, am I saying your name wrong? Somebody tweeted me. I should say Rene.
No, you're not saying it wrong, Leo. I mean, if you're in Quebec, you say René, but I mean, that's totally, no one does
that. So I'm saying it Quebecois, I'm saying it with the accent on the né, not the ren.
No, you're doing it fine.
Okay, my sister's middle name was René, and I always say René.
Yep, totally perfect.
Not René.
No.
He said taught us that the man is René, and the woman is René.
Yeah, when I was born in South Africa, it'd be René.
Tell me the Quebecois proper pronunciation again.
René.
Okay.
René, yeah.
René. René Richie.
Oui, c'est vraiment ça.
René.
Excellent.
Oh, bonjour, René. Comment ça va?
Comment ça va?
Ça va bien? Et tu?
We're so international. It's amazing.
I can't speak French. I just, this is everything like this. Le Laporte. Oui, oui.
Let's talk a little bit about the car. One of the venues that Apple perhaps is looking for a new market. And there's been a lot of stories about Apple going to Germany, of all places. They have an office there, right?
The office is all over the place now. It's amazing.
Well, not just, but an office designing cars.
Yeah.
That's, they have offices designing cars all over the place?
Well, I mean, the cars are going to be interesting to roll out because it's not just like a computer or a phone. The phone, you have to get FCC approval, absolutely. But to put any significant car on the road, it takes a lot of, you know, interfacing with those countries.
Apparently, Daimler had been talking with Apple about an iCar. And according to Handelsblatt, which I just like saying the name of, Handelsblatt, Daimler rejected Apple's overture to jointly design a car. So did BMW. So the German manufacturers apparently are not interested in partnering.
Well, I mean, this is the very similar. You know, Verizon turned Apple down when they wanted to, Apple had this idea of this phone and they wanted to control. It's the same thing. They wanted to control the user experience. They wanted to control the data, and Verizon was like, no one's going to do that.
Yeah, and at the time, Apple was not known for being able to make something like a smartphone, but they certainly were able to show that they could do that. But the phone is not a car. Building a car might be a challenge, yes or no?
No, I think it's definitely. I mean, they're both very complex. You know,
so it's like the Razor before the iPhone.
Is a car more less complex than an iPhone? Maybe
I think,
it is.
I think that the issue is that the stakes are higher. So when your iPhone crashes, it's not as big of a deal.
Yeah,
as the
that's
one car
true.
Crashes, you know? So I think that
well, there's a lot more metal. There's a lot more. I mean, it's more expensive to build a car.
And there's more systems.
And
each of them has to be is regulated, and each one is a safety thing. But also, it's about they don't know how a consumer reacts to a consumer product that they climb into. They know how to design something that people hold onto and put in their pockets and have that sort of contact with. But a person's relationship with a car is a really special thing that they have to really get worked out.
Right.
And there's so, as with any time we talk about Apple car rumors, there's really almost any reason for anything. One of them could be that they hired a team that could deliver expertise that they didn't have, but this team said, yeah, we really don't want to live in California. We want to live here where all of our kids are in school, and also we have the resources that we need. You're going to buy us a nice pretty building with one of those hot and cold water dispensers, and we're not moving.
I think they're probably emboldened by Tesla, because Tesla had no experience building a car either. Of course, it took them 10 years. But Apple's willing to go for a long time.
Well, and I think that also the pre-orders for the new Tesla tells you that there's pent up interest in something other than what is coming out of Detroit or Japan or anything else. I mean,
Tesla was a Lotus, wasn't it?
It was. It was a Lotus Elite. They didn't. Yeah. They just made the drivetrain, and so they did it incrementally. They learned how to do that.
Yeah.
And then they made a very, very expensive Model S and then a very, very expensive Model X. And then they started looking at, as was their plan all along, a more affordable car.
You know, Apple helped make a Razor, and then they made an iPhone that had no 3G and no GPS, and then they made a better version.
Oh, I see. When you're talking about the Razor, you're talking about that horrific iTunes phone.
Yeah. I
mean, that was terrible.
The first one. It was terrible.
The Rocker. Weesh.
Well... how much did they help make it? I think they just write code for the chipset that would actually let it play content from iTunes.
From Plays, yeah, Fair Play.
But it was designed to get them a toe in the water, right? To kind of understand this business, I would bet.
Which is sort of like CarPlay too.
Yeah. I think we know from people who have been interviewed since then that Jobs hated that phone. It's hard to get any indication that Apple decided to develop that phone with the idea that they're going to have a partnership with Motorola. So it's possible that they did. It is certainly possible that they did it with the idea that we're going to have a close relationship with Motorola, and we can ask them lots of questions and get because they're trying to woo us into making a special phone for them. They will give us all kinds of data that we that only Motorola has about markets, about penetration, about networks, about efficiencies that will help us build an iPhone. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
There's also that fear that Alex was talking about where you see that people's music listening is moving from unilateral, like unitasker iPods to multitasker converged devices, and people are carrying their phones and will they want to carry a phone and an iPod? Mm-hmm. So if you can start getting onto phones, even if it's rudimentary in the beginning, it's the same way like you can start getting into cars, even if it's through a CarPlay system, it helps. Mm-hmm. It helps move them into the general ecosystem better.
I don't know. I think it gets them into the social ecosystem, which is valuable. It's underestimated how important it is to just have your executives and your engineers socializing with and talking to executives and engineers from other industries and other companies, because that's how you get a really deep understanding about how a certain business works. I don't know exactly the reasons for doing the rocker phone. Particularly, I didn't understand after I started using the rocker phone. I got my loaner unit, but I don't know. It's also possible they're trying a flag about if we don't know what we're going to do with phones yet. We're definitely developing something we don't know what we want to do yet. Let's try on an experimental basis what it would be like to write software for someone else's hardware product. Like, could we simply add iTunes functionality and create something like CarPlay for phone devices, so that if anybody wants to have iTunes compatibility, we know we will quickly be able to build them what they need for that. Who knows? But it's there's just so many variables associated with this. It's building a car is going to be so difficult, but not just because of the complexity of the actual thing they're trying to build, but of who Apple is. Tesla is an unfounded. When they started making cars, they were a brand new company that never shipped anything. So they could make a huge win by simply saying, "We're going to build you a really expensive luxury sports car that accelerates like stink." It's like you will blow everybody else off the line with this because it's a purely electric car. And also, if you are a true car nut, if you are a true motor nut, we will give you a really cool electric car that doesn't look like it started off with a golf cart or something bought at Toys R Us. Then they built that into, we're going to build a luxury car that's a practical sedan that's also going to be appealing to people who, A, have lots of money, and B, appreciate being one of the first to have a practical electric car. And now it's three or four generations, and they could just build and platform as they go. What would happen if Apple creates an Apple car? They are not, and design it with the intention of selling it to consumers, and they designed it the way they designed the Mac Pro. Where, okay, we've built you a cylinder, a tube, and we're gonna try to impress you with the cooling system, because we know that the thing that really gets you all excited about spending $3,000 on a powerful computer is the cooling system and this wonderful tubular shape. And whereas the car people are gonna be like, we absolutely don't care about the manufacturing process you came up with for making those fenders. We don't give one quarter of a damn that how much recyclable materials are going into the tires. We'd use this to drive to work every single day. We spend 2.5 stinking hours on stinking I-93 every five stinking days a week to try to get to work and back. And you have given us something where whenever we tell you that this isn't good for us, we don't enjoy this, or we think this is ugly, you want to show us a video of a head on a white background talking about chamfer angles.
Yeah, I think the battleground for cars, I think, is pretty well defined at this point. And that is that they have to be self-driving. They have to be electric. I think that there's definitely a market there somewhere that wants the other stuff, the one that drive their own and have gas cars. But the growth market is in those two areas. And I think that, you know, everybody knows that at that point. What Apple has to do is implement that well, and then they can add all the design. And I think that, you know, I think that that is where we're going to continue to see growth. And right now it's very disruptive because you've got a bunch of manufacturers that are trying to figure out, they're in the same place that Apple's in. So if you look at Detroit or you look at Japan, you know, they're trying to figure out, in Germany, like, how do I, you know, move into the new market that I know I have to be in, but I can't figure out how to get out of the market that I'm in, you know? And I think that that's going to be something that we're going to see, you know, so it is a disruptive moment where if Apple's going to get into this market, it's going to be in the next, I think, probably the next 5 or 6 years. You know, I don't think it needs to be any faster than that, but I think that after that, you know, I think we look 10 years down the road and, you know, it's going to be mostly electric and mostly self-driving. You know, I think that because I think people have, especially when you see that groundswell of what happened with Tesla, People don't want to drive anymore. They want to text, you know, and they don't want to, and they don't want their hands to smell like gas. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
But boy, that's really living in the future, because there's a whole lot of, it's easy for us to say, oh, this is exciting, but that's years off.
Well, it's not that far off. I mean,
I'm buying one. I'm not saying I'm not into it, but I feel like that's going to be a long way off.
Well, let's just say the people who buy new cars. You know, there is a, you know, when you're looking at where is your next market going to come from and how is that going to look, you know, there's definitely a group of people that, probably your largest group of people that are going to buy them for their own individual use are going to be looking for that, you know, and I think that, my kids are older than 16 and my older kids are older than 16 and they have no interest in driving. they drive a little bit here and there, but it's not interesting.
It makes the car makers cry.
Yeah. Well, they don't want to drive. They don't identify themselves with their car the way we did when we were younger. They identify themselves with their Facebook page, you know, and so it's a much different view, and that is what's coming, you know, and so I think that is a huge shift, and it creates the instability that's required to move into the market in a way that hasn't been available probably for the last 20 or 30 years.
Well, I hope you're enjoying this travel down memory lane. It's funny, you forget, maybe it's just me, but the year goes so fast, you forget that these things happened, you know, in the spring. We're going to move ahead a little bit. This one is not from the spring. This is right after, you have to cast your mind back to September, all the way back to September. Right after the Apple Apple September event announcing the iPhone 7, right? Yeah. And I'm sorry, but I still laugh when I think about it. Remember that the iPhone 7 did not have, still does not have, don't try to make one of your own, a headphone jack. Phil Schiller said all it took was courage. Phil Schiller surprised me. I at the very beginning of the event, and I've been saying this for a couple of days, I said the most interesting thing will be to hear how Apple spins this, how Apple explains why they are removing the headphone jack, a well-known, widely used, open, as in non-proprietary connector, in favor of a connector that is owned by Apple, must be licensed for anybody else to use. The cynic in me would say, there's one word, profit. The word Phil Schiller chose was courage.
Yeah. I've already received, how many times have I received yet the picture of Bert Lahr in the courage. Wizard of Oz with that courage and then with Phil Schiller's face on it? Right now it's up to 5.
Wow. Didn't take much time. What do you think? Is that a reasonable rationale? What courage is involved?
None.
Courage to take a lot of abuse from
that's true. Or even to lose sales. Could it cost Apple sales?
It'll only cost Apple the sales from people who were already thinking really hard about switching to Android anyway, or people who didn't have that much of a connection to the iPhone to begin with. I think that they have hard numbers to demonstrate internal that reminds them that people are, if there's a reason why someone is going to not buy the iPhone 7, it's not going to be because they deleted the headphone port. It's something that, just like the crummy keyboards on a lot of the MacBooks, it's something that people will sigh and get used to because they're not going to hate it as much as they're going to hate switching to an entirely new operating system, an entirely new piece of hardware, and rebuying a whole bunch of apps. So that was, they had two good reasons after that.
That was
number one, right? Yeah. And that was just silly.
The thing that I think is that it may actually, I don't think it would really prompt people to not buy the iPhone 7 exactly. It may prompt people to delay the purchase because they have to think about it. It's sort of like, but how am I going to do this and how am I going to do that? I just have to think about all this stuff. So, you know, people may be putting it off longer and longer, possibly even for another generation as they work through what their issues are going to be.
Apple I shouldn't have had that spiced mocha. That's clear now. Apple did say they will include a $9 dongle in the box that will convert Lightning to analog. And that's good because it's only $9. I mean, Apple often overcharges for these dongles.
Yeah. Well, they're including in the box. I mean, it's free. Yeah. Everyone will get one.
And they'll include a pair of Lightning headphones.
Right. They couldn't change that.
They'd have to.
And also
that,
yeah. And also the pricing of them, once you lose them or put them through the wash, it's going to be $29 for replacement. I think that's about the same as what the regular wired ones cost, or not, if it's more, it's not that much more.
But the one thing that does hurt, though, is the people who lose them constantly, break them constantly, and actually in essence, cheap headphones. You know, you can get a pair of decent headphones for $6 on Amazon if you're the sort of person who goes through them. And that's,
and by the way, those $6 ones aren't much worse than the $30 ones. I mean,
right.
But the issue is going to be that even if that company, the $6 company, wants to sell lightning-based headphones, it's going to cost them $5 just to license. I don't know what the fee is, but something
$5. More than that.
Is it?
They're going to need to do the Made for iPhone program.
Yeah. And that's expensive.
And that's expensive and complicated, and you have to have, suppliers who are approved. I was talking to a manufacturer of wireless sensor tags, like HomeKit type stuff, and I said, is this going to be HomeKit compatible? And they said, no, because it's just too expensive. HomeKit also requires MFI certification, and it's just too expensive for us. We don't have enough reason to do it.
Yeah.
And also, remember, it's just a lack of ability to choose the headphones that you really, really want. If there's a punishment for not buying and into the Apple standard, and that is having to keep track of this $9 dongle, which it's going to happen. You're going to be, unless you get a bit of Sugru and just glue it to the end of your lightning-based headphones, you are going to lose this. You're going to be in a place where you cannot plug in to the device that you, if you're using old headphones, you're going to be in a situation where you cannot use the headphones you want to use, or you're going to have to find an Apple store and shell out $9. And just like me with a couple of the VGA adapters on my iPad, I now have three of them because of times where I was in a city and thought I had it, but I didn't. So I'd have to find an Apple store and shell out $30 for another one of them. I don't feel as though the world is going to come to an end. I feel this is a neutral thing. The only time that I feel like I have to clear my throat and interrupt is when people say this is a brave and wonderful and important thing that Apple is doing, because they're also saying, because the reason number two is that he mentioned
Phil Schiller said, and this it just made me queasy. Not merely that it comes down to courage, but the courage to move on to do something that betters all of us. Really. Really, ridiculous. Phil, how does that better anybody except Apple's bottom line? Yep. Come on.
Okay, and you want courage, bundle the AirPods with every iPhone. That would be
that
courage.
That would be courageous and foolhardy at the same time.
That's my
goal. This is the other thing that concerns me. It strikes me that lightning cables are more fragile, that they do tend to break more than other cables. Yeah, is that not the case?
Here is the lightning cable that I have plugged into my iPad, and it's yellow, and I count on, here's the end of it that's starting to crack already. They're not really good at that, and their difficulty is that I can't take the amount of money that I might spend on a pair of lightning headphones and apply that to a purchase someplace. I won't want to invest in $200 in a really, really nice pair of headphones that I can only really use with this one set of devices. Same thing with the AirPods, which is $170 for a really nice pair of Bluetooth headphones, particularly one that doesn't have like connecting wires between them. Okay, I can see that, but no, you will not be able to use, information that I have right now, which is realize that I've been spending the last 2 hours talking into a microphone and a camera as opposed to calling engineers that I know. The understanding that I have right now is that, the actual data sheet on it says that it requires a device that can run a 2016 version of iOS or Mac OS. So the watch, the Apple TV, your Mac, your iPhones, if it run iOS 10, for instance, it'll run it. So it doesn't mean that I can take $160 and apply to I'm upgrading my audio experience everywhere. I spent.
But are you, if you're still using Bluetooth, what's the upgrade?
Better audio, supposedly, but
well,
if you
this
want
all
better,
remains to be seen. We have to try them
again. Remains to be seen. Yeah. And also, if you want better audio, you have to now convince these people. Okay, but here are a pair of $180 headphones that I don't even necessarily need earbuds that are wireless that work for fitness. I just want great audio. Now, if you're going to sell me a pair of $200 headphones that are wired that have really good drivers and a lot of air around them, are you willing to tell me that these wireless headphones you're selling me that only works with Apple are going to be better than these wired headphones that I can use with my desktop computer, with my Windows machine, with my home stereo?
Is there an issue with the new wired headphones of charging and listening at the same time? Do people charge their phone and listen at the same time? Obviously, you can't do it.
Right, yeah, no. But do they
do people do that? I guess at night, maybe if you're charging your phone, you've gone to bed.
Yeah, because if say that you're running your audio through speakers, at your bedside, you would want to be charging your iPhone at the same time. I mean, I did think that the AirPods having a little charging case were clever.
They didn't invent that. My Moto Hints, Motorola Hints do the same thing. Any headphone earbud that just has the battery in the earbud has so little space for battery that it's not all day listening. So the solution is to have a larger case that has an all day battery. And when you're done listening, you put them in there. 15 minutes later, you can use them again. Kind of like the Apple Pencil. And so but that isn't anything Apple invented. That's frankly a necessity on anything with a tiny battery. So that's another issue. If you want to charge and listen, and I guess that's a use case for some people.
Someone's going to make another breakout dongle that will have a lightning connector and an earphone connector, I think, on it.
Yeah.
And you buy this, and don't worry, you will solve every problem you'll ever have with it. But again,
actually, you know what? I do that on an airplane. I will plug in, if I'm lucky enough to have a USB port, I will charge my phone because I'm going to listen the whole flight on a long overseas flight. And I will listen on the headphones, and that way I have something to use for a phone when I arrive. That's gone. Wireless it looks like the way to go, but again, we'll just have to see with these AirPods, only because Bluetooth is such a poor experience for most people.
As I've said many times over the course of this year, as this rumor of now fact has gotten better traction, they have not said a single thing. There are three reasons that meant that they could not keep a headphone jack if they wanted one. So really, I wish you talk about real courage. Real courage is saying we simply don't want to keep making iPhones with headphone jacks. And we know that this is going to annoy a lot of people who are very, very sensible. And we hope we don't lose them as customers. But we want to go our own way with this, as opposed to saying there are things that we can't do with a wired headphone jack. And we've been stupid saw about it. Whipped out this photo of like telephone operators in the 1920s. We've been using the same connector for
that.
All
really
these
pissed
years.
Me off, because those those aren't headphone jacks. That's a patch bay. And so the implication that we've been using headphone jacks since the turn of the century for operators is bogus. That's in fact.
I thought that was iCloud.
Tomato.
Isn't that how iCloud looks like behind
it? Well, I mean,
that's
Phil continues to impress me with he's a marketer. His willingness to kind of bend facts to suit the Apple story is very, very annoying.
I just think that there's a reason why it's been having a wired connector has been going on for centuries now, including why isn't he railing against like the HDMI cable? Why isn't that wireless? Well, because
it doesn't
electrons
work.
If you drop an electron down this end of this copper tube, it will shoot out the other end of that tube. And you don't have to configure it. You don't have to put a chip in it. It costs about as much as a length of copper wire. And so anybody can make it. And it's an open standard. So that's why there are a bunch of bogus arguments in favor of dropping the headphone jack. That's one of the bogus
arguments. Yeah, so the legitimate argument would be, and Phil did make this argument, that it's to save space inside the case. Space, though, that I imagine they immediately gave up by putting a second speaker on the iPhone. Now that's nice. Now we have stereo sound, left, right sounds.
And the cutaway image they had of the iPhone had a big block for the haptic engine that they're using to power the
home. That's right. You need a new haptic engine for the home button.
Everything's a trade-off.
It's about the size of a stick of dentine gum or Trident Strigler's gum.
So maybe that's it.
But again, these are problems that every phone manufacturer has, and almost every phone manufacturer has solved. So it's just, again, I wish they had it's completely legitimate for Apple to say that we are the people who get to design the iPhone, and we don't want to have a headphone jack anymore. And we're not doing this capriciously. We feel as though we're giving all of our users and any new users plenty of options to, we're accommodating them. But this is, we're making this decision first and foremost because we want to do this. That's real courage.
So one of the other things that I thought was really, really cool about WWDC is Apple's continued focus on accessibility. And it didn't just end with the keynote. We did get a lot of features there, like Siri for Mac. There were some features they didn't talk about, like on the iOS 10, you can now use the camera as a magnifying glass and you can shift colors if you have different, you know, different visibility needs. But they also had continuous labs on accessibility across all of the platforms. And on the Wednesday, they had an accessibility meetup, which was remarkable. I mean, a couple months ago, maybe it was just a month ago, Apple had it. They built an entire house inside One Infinite Loop, inside the atrium, where people from Apple could come and learn about all the technologies, including Braille keyboards and cochlear implants and Siri and HomeKit and all the different frameworks that they provide. And they did that on a smaller scale at WWDC, where they had an area where the very talented Apple engineer who's blind and who did the DJing at the Apple Design Awards showed you sort of how he did the DJing with the DJ Pro app. And they had cochlear implants you could put on your forehead and sort of feel how the bone conductivity worked. And they had various apps on display. They had the American Sign Language Association app, and they were talking about how that was developed and sort of what you could learn from it. And I got to actually type with a Bluetooth keyboard to a Braille reader for the woman, and I'm going to blank on her name for a second. I just had it up here, and I'll pull it up again, who... Haben Girma, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that, who is blind and deaf and graduated from Harvard Law. But thanks to this sort of technology, she was not only at WWDC, but she spoke at WWDC. One of the best presentations ever. You just see her typing away, and the presentation goes up, and all of a sudden it's Obama who's talking to her. Totally undersold it. But I find Apple's continued focus on accessibility, not just in the technologies, but giving it actual time on stage and on the floor. I hope that's something that becomes more competitive, because I'm a firm believer that when you make things more accessible in general, you make them more accessible for everybody.
Well, and I think that this is definitely a not just a focus for Apple, but a very, very intense focus from Tim Cook. I mean, I think that this is coming from the top down. And I think that he's just very focused. I think that the more and more I watch, you know, after the years of after Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs got Apple to a certain point, but Tim Cook, I really feel, is just an amazing, you know, next generation leader for Apple, where he's paying attention to all those other little things that make a difference, whether it's accessibility, and a lot of the political stances that Apple, you know, has decided to take one way or the other. But I think that he's very focused on it. And I think that accessibility is becoming a very important piece. And I think that Apple has been very good at being ahead of technology. And what I'm glad to see is that they're also ahead of things like accessibility, and they're setting the pace for everyone. You know, I think that, we're going to expect to see, closed captioning and subtitling and everything else in the next couple of years.
Described audio.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many parts of this that, WWDC keynotes are so useful because it's as simple-minded as a statement as this sounds. There is nothing in that keynote that they did not choose to put there. So it's super significant when they choose to spend so much time speaking in detail about accessibility features and people who have how they're going to make their technology accessible to people who have problems with vision and people who have problems with fine motor control and people who have problems with color perception. Not only are they talking about it because they feel as though this is as important as almost anything else that they're announcing that day, I wouldn't be surprised if they also acknowledge that this is something that they can be a leader at. And one way of defining leadership is getting there first and having the best solution and killing all the competition. But another aspect of the leader, of being a leader, is inspiring other people and putting their attention on something that you feel that they should be paying attention to. And of course, Apple's not the only company doing that, but I think that they're the company that's flying that flag as highly as they can. I mean, I brought my pick of the week, which I might be burning right now because I have to because it's something that's relevant. The new Kindle reader has an actual special font selection for people who have dyslexia. So it basically to someone who does not have that problem reading, it looks like a very, very weird or stylistic or hippie sort of font. But it actually, the things that tend to confuse the brain that has a problem in actually discriminating letters and forming them into words, it basically gets rid of those hacks that kind of that putties in those cracks in the sidewalk that a dyslexic brain will trip over and makes it easier to create. And when you think about software, it costs a lot of money to develop, but it's not as though you have to buy up all the manufacturing capability of the world to fuse glass to this new kind of metal that you've created. It costs money to develop, but in the end, it's just electrons. It costs nothing in the long run to add an extra font that makes this easier to use for other people. Just like the community that needs, again, interfaces that don't require quite such a precise touch, or require mono output, or require a lot of help for people with low vision. That's not a huge market. It's also not something they're going to get a lot of grant money for. It's not something they're going to get a big advertising hit for. There's not going to be a telethon in which Tim Cook in a big fluffy tuxedo is singing to a person with a bad low vision and trying to get sympathy for the company. It's just something that they feel is an important thing. Mm-hmm. And although, one of my broken record things about Apple is that I wish that they would make devices that are more accessible to people who don't necessarily have the money to buy a luxury item. But that doesn't mean that they're not focused on trying to make it so that there's as few barriers as possible while they can still be Apple and still pursue their business plan. So yep. Bravo to them.
I hope you're enjoying this trip down memory lane as we get ready for a great year for MacBreak Weekly for 2017 with Renee and Andy and Serenity and all, Georgia, all the people who join us every week. MacBreak Weekly's on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That would be 1900 UTC. I hope you will stop by this coming Tuesday, brand new show for you. But because I wanted to give everybody off the week off for the holidays, we thought we'd put together some of the best moments. Now, you got to remember that we didn't learn about the details of the iPhone 7 until September of this year. So way back in June, we were all debating, and I think the big question at that time, if you remember, was would they, could they, might they remove the headphone jack? Now, and I acknowledge it's a rumor, but the rumor is Apple will take the headphone jack out of the iPhone, the next what? iPhone. What?
What, Leo, what?
okay, this rumor's been around for a while, but as we get closer and closer, I think this gets more and more credible. And also, to add to the credibility, Motorola just did that with their Moto Z. There's no headphone jack.
I had a bunch of HTC phones that didn't have headset jacks
really?
For years. Yeah.
What?
They had this little dongle you'd put on the bottom of the USB. I think there were Windows mobile phones, but there might have been a couple others. And you'd put this little USB dongle. It was a breakout, and it would go to a headphone jack and then a charger and other stuff.
Nilay Patel writing in The Verge, taking the headphone jack off phones is user hostile and stupid. Have some dignity, he says. John Gruber responds at daringfireball.net saying, hey, that's what people said when Apple took the floppy disk out of the iMac. This is... times are changing.
Well, I think that one of the things every year that takes out the headphone jack, like just for the last.
So, do you think they won't do it?
No, I mean, at some point they'll do it. They'll do it. Apple tends to make changes when they believe that they can provide a better sort of a technological leap forward. So it's why the dock port was a horrible port. They had rewired it, for FireWire and for video and for audio, and it had just become unbearable. So they switched to Lightning, and people complained, and now we use Lightning. I mean, the biggest problem with the switch was that Apple utterly failed to have adapters ready for weeks afterwards, which was just incredibly bad. But the change itself ended up moving us forward. And for the last few years, they've been prototyping things without headphone jacks, because when you remove the headphone jacks, the internal volume and there's other things that you can do with it. And one year, maybe this year, they'll ship it. And whichever year they ship it, we will be incredibly upset. And then 3, 4, 5 years from now, we'll probably barely remember there was a headphone jack.
I mean, I know we were upset with the 30-pin to Lightning, but does anyone ever want to go back to the 30-pin? I mean, I look at those. When I find them laying around my house at some point, I look and I'm like, oh, man, that was really unhappy life. Compared to, these small little connections. And I think that the hard part for Apple is that you could theoretically try to do it softly, which is that we're going to release all these great products that are now using Lightning and or Bluetooth. But the problem is can you build up enough demand to make it worth making lots of those? If you do it by taking the headset away. If you do it gradually, of course, in a year, we all know that the headset's going to go away. But are people going to get enough sales out of it? By taking the headphone away, you kind of force everybody to go down that path. And it could have a negative impact on the number of people that upgrade, because I just don't want to go down that path. I think that's the big, people like me that have invested a lot in headphones, might be a little more resistant to to upgrading on this round, which could be, you know, billions of dollars for Apple.
Yeah, I mean, I did write something and then decide not to post it because I don't want to respond to a rumor, especially if it's something I'm going to, if I feel the need to say something rather dramatic. I shouldn't say things like that about things that may or may not actually happen. I did not read Gruber's piece. I disagree with the headline because I don't think the two situations are in any way analogous. This rumor has been around for such a long time, and it's been spiking in the past 2 or 3 months. And so at least for the past month, in addition to all the other things that I sort of spy on other people for when I'm in public, I've been sort of trying to add to that list what kind of headphones are they using. And I rarely see people on buses, on trains, in public parks, all these other regular public places using Bluetooth headphones instead of wired ones. People tend the world that I've been observing is one in which people tend to buy cheap $10 to $30 wired compact headphones and use that as their daily listening thing. So if Apple were to suddenly say every single iOS running 2016 model iPhone is not going to have a headphone jack. You're going to have to either buy special headphones or you're going to have to carry a dongle. I think that would be quite premature at this point. It's not as though people are moving away from wired headphones so far. Bluetooth is simply a way of connecting audio to a phone that is useful for some applications, but not at all attractive in most applications. So I think it's like a, when they introduced the new iMac, it wasn't just that they deleted the floppy port. Remember that they switched from ADB to USB. That was a different sort of thing because all it required, everything was moving to USB anyway. All the future devices that anybody was going to buy for any platform, if you wanted to buy a mouse or a keyboard, it was going to be USB. That was very consumer positive. Also, you switch out, it's not as though you go through lots of keyboards and mouses. you will probably use the one that comes with the device, and if you don't like it, you'll buy a replacement once and that's it. It's not like leaving the house, I don't have headphones. Thank goodness. I found another set of headphones in my glove box. I'll use those ones instead. I just think it's quite premature. And if Apple were to introduce headphone-less iPhones this fall, I've kind of stuck for an answer as to how they would present this as anything for a look. We now have more volume inside the iPhone to work with, and look, we have one less component that we have to pay for.
No, they're going to say something. The sound is now going to be 20 times better because the DAC is outside of or something.
I'm trying to figure out, we can ignore it
when HTC does it. You can ignore it when Moto Z does it because there's many, many choices, but only one company makes an iPhone. Yeah. So it changes it for everybody.
Yeah, I don't want to say that people should just ignore it because when you do see something in the Wall Street Journal, this is the best time to express your concerns because if you say wait until Apple goes up on stage and makes their case, by then that iPhone is done. That's shipping. Like no matter what you say after that, that iPhone is already shipping. And there have been cases where Apple backtracked, like with the buttonless iPod Shuffle, and they went back to buttons. But that's, you know, you had a year of a buttonless.
The other thing that worries me is, it buys 3 or 4 more years for the Lightning port. It puts off any conceivable shift to Type-C connector because if you make this change, you're not going to next year get rid of the Lightning port.
I believe they feel the Lightning port is way ahead of the Type-C connector still, that it's thinner, it's lighter, it does more things, and they have a better control over it.
I wouldn't guess that anybody thinks that, but Apple.
It's a smaller profile connector still for them. USB-C is a little bit bigger, and they can't reassign the pins if they want.
It's a higher profit connector for them.
That's true too. But so, like, you can make it like Apple could go up on stage and say, "Look, we've done this, but we've also built the Lightning now has these audio pins and it'll do the DAC inside.
It'll give you analog out.
Yeah. And there's a little adapter, and they'll probably sell it for $30. But hopefully, they'll put it in the box, and you can go on using your headphones. We have Lightning ear pods for you. But the biggest concern is people who want to charge while listening, and that happens all the time. You know, you were talking about kids watching Minecraft. You know, while they sit there, there's all sorts of people. But there are also all sorts of people who just listen without ear pods. Like I listen to podcasts all the time.
I know, and that's not going to be a good trend. I don't want to see more people walking down the street with their speakers open.
Not in public, but if they put two, like right now the iPhone is, Apple, the music company, has paid pitiful attention to speakers on iPhones over the years. They've finally gotten the iPads better with the Echo, with the big acoustic chambers.
You can't put good speakers on it.
No, but you could put two speakers, maybe even more than two speakers, and at least finally have something where if I turn it, you know, it's not coming out one side, and if I put my hand here, it's not coming out at all. Yeah. At least it's coming out of the top, or maybe coming out of both sides finally. I mean, there could be improvement there.
Does it break things like credit card readers and stuff that are designed for the audio?
Square will have a hard time. Absolutely. Yeah, and some scientific equipment.
Yeah, there are a couple of other extended reasons. One of which is that remember that the headphone jack is a way for a developer to add hardware to the iPhone without having to be part of the MFI program. There's also maybe a concern that it will be possible to do some form of DRM through that connector that you can't do through a perfectly analog headphone device. There's a question of will makers of headphones be able to still make really cheap headphones without having to be burdened by licensing fees? There are a lot of questions here. I really hope Apple doesn't do it. I don't think it's the right time for it. I think that it would make me rethink a couple of things about Apple if they did it. But unfortunately, this is the time of year. Remember that if there's going to be a case designed for the new iPhone that does not have a headphone jack, we would have expected to have seen samples of this show up somewhere, and we're starting to see purported samples show up. So who knows?
It'll be just the one with the better camera that'll have no headphone port, thereby guaranteeing
maybe
the most possible rage from the Apple audience.
It's the planet of the apps. I'm on the one hand, what a great name. And Apple's going to produce this. But on the other hand, I'm a little disappointed that they really are going with just a straight ahead reality show format. It feels like that's not as innovative as it could be.
Yeah, especially when you look at how reality shows are produced, where they don't. They really are shaped by producers, or at least the understanding when you're watching them is that they didn't just simply pick, like, if this is supposed to highlight the development of apps, they didn't pick like the five most promising apps. They decided they wanted to cast a role of, here is the socially demented nerd. Here is the team that works well together. Here is the husband and wife whose marriages might come apart as nerves are frazzled. Here's the 12-year-old wonder genius, and you know that, like, if this were America's Got Talent, you're like, it doesn't matter who they show in the next 11 weeks. You know that they pick the adorable 12-year-old girl who cries every time a judge says something nice about her singing. They know that they picked her to win.
We love reality shows. I mean, the ratings are great. People love American Idol and The Voice and Survivor and on and on and on. Naked Dating or whatever it's called. But by the way, they may be naked, but you don't get to see it. I don't understand. What's the point? Okay. No, I'm kidding.
The point is scabs. You get to see scabs in all kinds of places, except for just two or three.
So I guess this is going to be kind of like, I don't know, Shark Tank or Project Greenlight, where you've got 10 app developers and they try to convince the, you know, big shots that they've got the next big app, and then blah, blah, blah. Applicants must agree to have their app functional on iOS, macOS, tvOS, or watchOS by late October. If they're accepted onto the show, developers will receive guidance from tech experts. Potential fund...
I think they need to be in front of all of us.
Funding from VCs of up to $10 million in promotion in Apple's iOS store. So there's an open casting call. It will be filming later this year. Daniel, are you gonna try out?
I wanted to be the Tim Gunn of this show. I thought that would be more appropriate.
Yeah,
we want to be judges.
I have nothing against reality shows, but I just feel like as you say, Andy, it's going to be archetypes, but it's also inevitably going to be misrepresenting the real process.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, what have we been talking about for this whole first segment of the show? Frustrations with the App Store, with, you know, we haven't gotten into frustrations with submissions and app rejections.
Yeah.
But this defines what it means to be a developer on Apple platforms in many ways these days. Yeah. And even apart from that, like, if Apple's paying for the show, you're not either going to even have things like frustrations with, like, the inscrutability of an API.
You'll never hear about that.
You know, so all the kind of stuff that might make for natural drama in a show that's, like, about something that's kind of hard to jazz up, I think, you know, software development. But
people
the natural
typing.
Drama.
Yay.
Yeah, the natural drama would be,
a lot of
dealing right. with problems that Apple doesn't really want to put the spotlight on. So,
no, and that's my concern. This is really just going to be a great big ad for Apple and how great it is. And, oh, my God, you've won the jackpot. You're going to be the next WhatsApp. And that's really, I think, not the message that should be that kids especially who are thinking of this as a career should be.
I had an idea for Apple's, why would Apple choose to do this show of all shows? And Apple is sort of like so many tech companies, just famously troubled by recruiting, right? Trying to find employees.
This is how you find talent.
They're going to have a roster of ambitious, probably not all of them talented, but they're going to have a pretty good dossier here of people who are willing to really, I guess, fight for being a developer, fight for building great apps. And then Apple being the one in charge of all this, I guess they can just come swoop in and say, hey, regardless of whether you got on the show or whether you won the show, how'd you like to come interview for this this position? So,
that's a really good point, Daniel. That may be the real reward,
I mean,
a job at Apple. Forget that.
I don't know. I mean, how much trouble are they having attracting talent as it is?
Daniel, by the way, we didn't mention this, but you were an Apple. You worked at Apple. You were a developer at Apple.
I was, starting in 1995 through 2002. So I've been out of Apple for much longer than I ever worked there. But I do have some experience with the company. And, of course, it's fueled my interest over the last.
Yeah, and you were there at the rebirth. What did you work on?
I worked on System 7, System 8. And then I jumped ship from the System 7 team and went to work on very early OS 10 stuff.
Wow.
And the stuff I was working on was always really low-level stuff, usually stuff with no graphics interface. So stuff on System 7, I worked on stuff like the Process Manager. And then I switched over to OS 10 and worked on stuff like the Code Fragment Manager, which was the the thing that loads the code literally from disk to make an app run. So it was real low level, real nerdy stuff. But it was an experience. And to be there at that time, I was hired. I was actually hired as a full-time employee in 1996, a few months before Steve Jobs came back.
Wow.
So it was really quite a time to be there. People talk about it a lot these days. But that was the time when, the folks who were at Apple then and stuck around, that was like a time to really believe in the company, because everybody was leaving to go to companies that, conventional wisdom would say had a shot in the world. And Apple was at the bottom of that list for almost everybody, including many people, many of us who were in the company, I think, still thought it was a long shot, but we couldn't find anything better to work on. So it was exciting to be there. And I'm really proud of Apple for, making it as far back as they have. And my only complaint is that they're so powerful that, I certainly have no ability to rein in that power. So see how far they go, I guess.
Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
I wish you'd called on me instead of Renee, because I almost had this time perfectly. There is a kitchen item that I've been sort of dreaming of owning since I was 8 years old and my parents didn't have one, but I saw the commercials for them. And then stupidly, only recently I realized that these things were still available. So I can't show it to you in operation, but I can show it to you the magical results of the West Bend Stir Crazy popcorn maker.
Oh, they're popping right now. It's happening.
It's finished popping. See, but it's amazing because it's this wok. Let me adjust Crane Cam 3000, the future video podcasting, so you can get a better look at it. It is essentially just like a wok sort of thing. You pour a couple tablespoons of oil into, and then half a cup to a cup of popcorn kernels into, and it maximizes every variable of popcorn. Now, first of all, you get the Jiffy Pop aspect, in which you just see these a couple of motorized arms that just keep the kernel spinning through the oil so it doesn't burn and every kernel pops. So you basically get to watch popcorn appearing as if by magic in front of your eyes. And then you also get the advantage of stovetop popping, by which it's like light, it's fluffy, it's hot, it's crunchy, and it makes the room smell like popcorn. And also, you get the laziness of microwave popcorn, where when you're done, when it's finished, you just tip it over like this, and then take the scorching hot electric wok sort of thing. If you're not demonstrating it, you can you will not get the towel trapped underneath it like that. There you go, because it is actually popping into its own bowl of popcorn. It's not that hot, but I just don't want to. I don't want to make be a YouTube viral sensation by
do like, it.
Scorching myself. There you go. And there you go.
Look at that, ladies and gentlemen.
It's like this is the best popcorn. It's like Alton Brown has. Alton Brown hates unitaskers. Alton Brown has said that he. I just put a big steel bowl on the top of the stove, and I cover it with aluminum foil. And now you have a bowl, a steel bowl. You have to buy aluminum foil. You have to clean up. You just wind up here with just an actual bowl of popcorn that you take with you into the living room, or just keep this on an end table and keep making more popcorn as you go from the Lord of the Rings trilogy to the Hobbit trilogy. And again, it's just beautiful, crunchy, hot. Oh, if only you could smell how nice my office smells right now. I just smell like delicious, hot, fresh popcorn. And it's like $30. And I sort of thought to myself, like, why? I have $30. I'm going to make another $30 really quickly. Why don't I buy myself, live the dream, and buy myself a stir-crazy corn popper? So here it is empty. So you can see like the spinning, like rotating arms there. And as you can see, like every kernel is like has been popped, and it's a very clean pan. When you're done, you can just like sort of unscrew these motorized arms, just give it a wipe out to take the grease out of it. There's like no cleanup whatsoever. You can toss the bowl part in the dishwasher. So it's my pick of the week because it's inexpensive, it's awesome, it's entertaining on several levels, and that means that as we say goodbye, now I have a bowl of popcorn I can eat as I go back upstairs to my one room with air conditioning.
Andy Inako, he's the man.
I'm sorry, there is no phone app for this, okay? That does not disqualify it from being a useful kitchen item.
You make me want popcorn. If that was your goal,
there you go. If you can't have salt, you don't have to put salt on it. If you can't have sweet things, you don't have to. Okay, no,
I asked my internet doctor, Dr. Mom, in the chat room. She says popcorn's okay because it's got a low glycemic load. So
there you go.
More popcorn for everyone.
But I don't keep chips and like tortillas chips and stuff like that in the house. Yeah, there you go.
Have it with your Dell's lemonade.
This stuff is pure sugar, but it has no trans fats and it's gluten free.
It's gluten free, ladies and gentlemen. Popcorn's gluten free.
Gluten free.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Popcorn's gluten free. Depends on what you use as your oil, whether it has trans fats or not. So did you do a lot of research before you settled on the West Bend popcorn maker?
Well, I remember as a kid the commercials for the West Bend stir-crazy popcorn maker.
Yeah.
I wanted to honor the achievement of the original intellectual property and patent holder. And just like people get offended by Samsung, you know, ripping off Apple. But yeah, I mean, I actually had a the stove in this house is like a glass top and you can't really shake a pan in front of it and also creates a mess. I have a hot air popper, but it makes this like chewy sort
of.
Yeah,
I don't like hot air popper.
Not really right.
Yeah.
But this is exactly like, no kid, I got this like 3 weeks ago. This is probably my fifth or sixth bowl of popcorn. every time I make this, I think I'm about to like dump this into a Roche Brothers brown shopping bag, shake it with salt, and then get into the car so my mom can drive me and my siblings to a movie theater to watch a cartoon.
Now, I'm looking because I'm, of course, in the market now for this fine product.
Confit popcorn? Asking for a friend.
Confit? You could poutine it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Don't start me. Don't tempt me,
Leo. Poutine corn. Mm.
You can popcorn ball it.
You can ball it.
Mix it with sugar, maple syrup.
Make a popcorn ball.
Hot dogs here.
Wow. There's another Rhode Island treat I haven't had in a while. Popcorn balls. Let's all go to the shore and get some clam cakes and we'll invite
Serenity. We'll make it a party.
Yeah. Hey,
go the roller derby. Have a real Providence weekend.
Did you get the dome one or did you get the bowl one?
Oh, you want the you, oh no 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 you don't want the flat sides. You want
no,
the kind
no.
of the bowl.
You want the you bowl want one. Okay.
You for entertaining, this is the sign of class right here. they'll know with the straight sides, they know you weren't sweating over a hot stove, but with the bowl dome, that's going to be our little secret.
They can't tell.
Really, I kind of want to get one for like the for the garage. I want to get one for the boat, for the car. I want to buy a boat and get it now get a car so I can.
Very important. What kind of popcorn do you recommend?
Probably because I was flashing back to the days of Let's Make a Deal and syndicated repeats when I was a kid and listening after this thing, a supply of Jolly Time popcorn.
I remember them.
And I got to say that those people at ABC were very, very knowledgeable because it is light, it is yellow, it is fluffy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make the entire house smell like a 1973 Chevy Vega exploded and threw up inside your house, as microwave popcorn is wont to do.
By the way, in case you're worried, and here's the good news, the West Bend Stir Crazy Popcorn Popper is built to North American electrical standards.
USA.
I still crave popcorn every time I see that. And by the way, I bought that thing. Actually, it came broken, so I had to buy another. We used it once. We've never used it again. I like the old-fashioned method. I have many ways of making coffee at home. I have many ways of making popcorn, two of my favorite treats. And we got a thing that has a handle that you crank and it twirls around. It's called, a whirligig popcorn maker. But really, my favorite is still the pan, some oil, just, simple. Andy's funny. You never know what you're going to get with Andy and Notco. All right, we jump now to August, before the new iPhone came out, and a big, big landmark for Apple. Watch. How many products in tech have sold 1 billion items? It took the computer industry 25 years to ship the billionth PC. Android has past a billion devices, but not just one manufacturer.
It's one manufacturer part that's impressive.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Really impressive.
Diodes.
You know what's cool? A billion iPhones. And I think it's kind of cool also. Steven Sinofsky, the guy behind Windows 8, former Microsoft employee, tweeted, getting to 1 billion cumulative, the iPhone 9.1 years, the PC 20 years, Android 4.5 years, McDonald's took 23 years to get to a billion hamburgers. Facebook took 8.7 years to get to a billion users.
Well, and also I think the Facebook and McDonald's are an equal thing. But when you talk about the personal computer, these are different manufacturers with different backgrounds, right, and so on and so forth. So, the iPhone is, I think, very different than the PC.
And it costs a lot more than a Big Mac.
And if you combine iPhone and Android, it's 2 billion really fast.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I mean, the world has changed because of portable computer, pocket computers.
Yeah.
Everybody
I think
has
that's them. The impressive stat. If you look at computers versus handsets are just obliterating everything.
Yeah.
Well, and you really think about the timing of things, whether things were really ready to happen. I mean, obviously the Newton was out there and it could have done the same thing over time, but it just the technology wasn't there. The infrastructure or the ecosystem wasn't ready for that kind of screen at that time. So it really also is, timing is everything.
If you, and you can tell this is true because it's from Wolfram Alpha, stacked all the iPhones flat.
It would take you to the moon.
It would
Mr.
take
Wolfram
you.
Wolfram did this personally. You can believe it.
Did he really? Did Steven do this? No, I don't know. It sold enough iPhones, if stacked flat, they would go from the Earth to the ISS 9 times. I don't know why they picked the ISS.
Yeah, but the question is, when they say 9 times, are they calculating the different width of each iPhone?
No, they're averaging 7.5 millimeters.
Okay,
so times a billion
sales amounts. So it would be, I think that the accuracy is
It's fudgy math.
I guess I could turn it into the moon by just changing this calculation here. It wouldn't be so hard. It doesn't go probably to the moon. That's why.
Or back. Maybe you can get
not
to the
even
moon
close.
Back yet. Mm.
And besides, if you had a stack of iPhones going to the moon, what would keep them from falling over?
You and your physics.
Well, there's
you and your physics
gravity,
support.
Of course.
It's going to be perfectly. Yeah.
Tim Cook says running Apple is sort of a lonely job. God, I feel bad now. Sort of a lonely job with extreme compensations.
Well, he does say no one should feel sorry for a CEO. But.
Yeah. And that, lonely, you know, it's lonely at the top. They always say that. This is a he's been given interviews lately. This is an interview with the Washington Post that came out this week. I'll be honest, I just couldn't get through it. So if you guys, first of all, like a lot of these interviews, like last week's interview we talked about, a lot of pros.
Well, this one is really substantive. The one we were talking about last week, it was most the one we were talking about last week gave you the impression that someone was able, they were able to sneak in 10 minutes and they had to really stretch that out into something that looked like a feature. This really looked like it was not only substantive, but also like the writer had the ability to come back later and ask him to elaborate or on some points. It really was one of the most introspective interviews with Tim Cook I've seen. This is one of those interviews that not only for length, substance and length, but also for how well it was put together. It was, I clicked the little K in my Chrome bar to make sure I save a copy to my Kindle because it's very, very readable.
Cook, 55, chooses his words carefully, taking long pauses and speaking with a slight Alabama drawl. Though he has favorite phrases, many things are deep, and Apple's mission is always its North Star, he eschews the jargon many CEOs use. And while he's quick to trumpet Apple, he's also unassuming, quickly noting, after saying his job can be lonely, that I'm not looking for any sympathy. CEOs don't need any sympathy. Let's walk through it then. Let's get the high points. He does admit that he hired the wrong person initially for Apple Retail. This was after Ron Johnson left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like what we had all assumed.
We knew that. It was a
complete
very quick
culture clash of between them.
We've all forgotten his name. Before Angela Arendt.
The guy from Dixon's. I mean, if you've ever been to Dixon's in London.
Downmarket.
You would never assume that would connect with Apple.
Right.
So I have bought things there, and it's not the same as an Apple store.
He says the North Star has always been the same, even as under Steve, which for us is about making insanely great products that really change the world in some way and rich people's lives. Our reason for being hasn't changed. That's great. I love hearing him say that. I'm not sure I'd agree that that's what they've been doing in the last few years, but... that should be their goal.
It's something that's very, very good for a CEO to be heard saying in an in-depth review, thing like this. But with Apple and particularly Tim Cook, you definitely believe it, or at least I certainly believe it.
Oh, I think he's dead honest. That's one thing you got to give Tim Cook.
And also it syncs up very well with... It syncs up very well with what he's saying throughout most of the rest of the interview is that it seems as though a lot of the hits that he and Apple tend to take are based on people not understanding that Apple is really in whatever they do, they're in it for the long haul. So if they don't come out with something, he talked about, for instance, PDAs, that was not just netbooks, but PDAs and all these categories that were not just simply flash in the pans. They were actually really, really good products that helped a lot of people were very, very useful. But nonetheless, whatever articulation of an idea, the PDA or the netbook was, it wasn't the sort of thing where 10 years later people are still going to be using that sort of stuff. Whereas Apple is going to hold back their characters, that they're going to hold back until they find the thing that people are going to be still using in 10 years. And sometimes that could be frustrating for analysts. It could be frustrating for users. It could be frustrating for shareholders if they really want to see that interim product that, once again, very useful, very, very practical, but not the sort of thing that Apple wants to dedicate the next 5 or 10 years on. There's a lot of real meat here, and a lot of it goes back to some things that we knew about Apple all along, but we've never seen it articulated by one person quite so well. I really liked when he starts talking about Steve and the job of being his successor. I don't think that one of the things that sort of frustrates me often about Apple executive interviews is that they're often very, very guarded about how they're feeling about anything, and that you don't really get a sense of you get too much of a sense of here's the mission that I'm trying to complete by giving you this interview, as opposed to I'm here to give you an actual interview. I've actually highlighted this part of it. Like you said, the question, you succeeded one of the icons of American business. What does it feel like to step into those shoes? Which we've heard articulated a million different ways. But he says, his response is, to me, Steve's not replaceable by anyone. And then in parentheses, noting that his voice softens here. He was an original of a species. I never viewed that as my role. I think it would have been a treacherous thing if I would have tried to do it. When I first took the job as CEO, I actually thought that Steve would be here for a long time because he was going to be chairman, work a bit less after he came back up the health curve. So I went into it with one thought, and then weeks later, 6 weeks later, whatever, it was very quickly. The day he died was sort of the worst day ever. I had really convinced myself. I know this sounds probably bizarre at this point, but I'd convinced myself that he would bounce because he always did.
So in some ways, Tim's the reluctant leader of Apple. I think, yeah. You know, I have huge respect for Tim Cook. And as I said, I get his integrity. He says one of the things that they've changed is they brought a lot of social responsibility to Apple, which is something that was lacking under Steve Jobs. When asked, is the iPhone, you know, the fact that the iPhone is now 3/4 of your business, is that a problem? He says, no, that's a privilege. He says a smartphone is a 1-to-1 product. He says, a TV, there's one, you know, per household or a couple per household. But this is a privilege. What other products do you know where the ratio of people to the product for a consumer electronics product will be 1-to-1? And that means, you know, he says a lot of people are focused on 90 days on the quarter, but that means in the long haul, this is the level of performance is going to skyrocket, and there's nothing that's going to replace it in the short term or the intermediate term. Either.
Well, and I think that also when you look at app installs and so on and so forth, you really the issue is that revenue, while it may not keep on growing as, you know, year over year, is also not going to erode very quickly either.
Right.
People are using the operating system they're happy with. They bought a lot of apps for it. They're not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And making sure that process is comfortable, it's easy to move from one phone to the other, also makes it much easier. I mean, it's so seamless to go from an old phone to a new phone that really isn't a process.
But this is the reason I bring this up is this is, if I have a criticism of Tim, and I realize who am I to criticize Tim, but if I have a criticism of Tim as an Apple user and Apple lover, it's that he's a great caretaker. He's a great operations guy. He's got a lot of integrity. He's a great, you know, he's a warm, wonderful person. But he doesn't have that spark that to take Apple to the next thing. I think Apple, and I don't know who at Apple does. I don't feel like Johnny Ive is really even very much present anymore. So I'm wondering where is that brilliance going to come from that takes Apple to the next thing? And he says, and this is interesting, that he doesn't want to chase the next thing. He says, I'm not saying we're not going to do anything else. I'm saying the smartphone is still an unbelievable product category to be in, and not just for this quarter, year, or for years. So I wouldn't want to think anybody thinks this, oh, better days are behind us thing. So what he's really saying is we're going to stick the course. And, yeah, I would expect that from Tim, but I do think you have to have some – you want to see some sparks, some innovation, something new, don't you?
Well, I think that even under Steve Jobs, we didn't really see that many new products. I mean, you know, we saw, yeah, exactly. You know, like the original idea.
Let's grant that Steve is unique, but he did pioneer several categories. The iPad, the iPhone, the iPod, those were all massive game changers. And one
they
could,
were, but they didn't happen over, you know, they didn't all happen over a 5-year span. I mean,
I understand it takes time.
Based on,
do you think the car is going to change the world? I don't think so. In fact, I think there's some great question whether Apple's even got the capability or the drive to make it happen.
There are two different questions here. And one of them is that I think that I would definitely not want to be in Tim Cook's shoes, where it's not enough that I just do good work. It's not enough that I produce products that people like. Well, I'm saying it's a unique kind of pressure. Again, I'm so pleased by the insight we're given into what it's like to do Tim's job day after day. He talks about how the relationship that Apple products have with their customers. And he's talking about personal stuff like him not being really completely aware of how tangible that kind of relationship is. The first time he talks about the getting emails from customers, not just my phone sucks, why isn't this working properly, but like thanks to FaceTime I was able to be with my father when he was dying, and because I could not be, I couldn't travel 3,000 miles. And that's the sort of thing that I think really affects what he does day by day. I don't think that he would have chosen that to talk about in such a large interview if it hadn't really hit him in such a big way. But the other problem is that it's not enough to just, again, be doing your job exceptionally well. You have to be Willy Wonka. People right. are casting you in this role. I think the biggest difficulty is that, and we see that here too. I'll personalize this one because it makes it easier to explain, where people like to, on our four-person panel, it's an easier story if it's, here's the one person who is a true lover of Apple, and here's the person who hates Apple absolutely, and here's the person who's sort of above the fray doing this, when actually that's, we switch off that role
all the time, yeah,
minute by minute by yeah. minute. But it's easier to tell that story, and people want to tell the story about how Apple is this company that is going to be, it has this big bag of wiffle dust that they sprinkle over creating absolute magic, as opposed to a team of engineers that works exceptionally hard trying to get things right. And a huge company with enough resources that they know that they can build whatever they want at their slightest whim. And so they can't just do things on their slightest whim, because once they push that boulder off the top of the mountain, that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and pick up more and more speed. And before you know it, you're building something that's incredibly stupid, but you put $18 billion into, and half of that being a huge marketing push with billboards on at every bus kiosk.
But this has always been the case with Apple, which is...
I would like to cut him some slack and just simply say, make good products, make yeah. things that you believe in, make things that have a point of view, and it's okay if this isn't something that we haven't seen in a while. Google can do that. Google can create. Well, just this week, was discovered that they have on GitHub a brand new operating system that could be used for damn near anything.
Fuchsia.
And with Google, it could even be this is an idea they're playing around with. They think in 5 years' time it might be useful for something they might be making, or it might be something that they just wanted to do as an open source project. When Apple does something, it's we're fixated on the idea that this is going to be something that's going to be tangible and sellable in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So that's a big yoke for them to wear.
Cook is big into AR these days. In an interview published on Thursday, in fact, this has lent some credence to the idea that maybe the iPhone 8 is particularly all about AR. And he talked to BuzzFeed News and said the company is bullish on AR. There's no substitute for human contact, Cook said, and so you want the technology to encourage that. Is it too soon to start talking about the iPhone 8, and too soon to think about whether that might have an AR component?
I think AR is going to be huge. So at Big Nerd Ranch, we've already done a couple of proofs of concepts for like a museum, and the effect has been great. It can really augment learning, and you know, we're all about the learning, and I think it's very exciting that with AR, you take your phone out into the world instead of with VR, where you lock yourself in a dark closet and play with your Vive. It's neat to go out and see the kids with the Pokemon Go running around the neighborhood. I think it is a life-affirming technology.
Yeah.
But it's good. It depends on what version of AR you want to support. Pokemon Go is definitely what the technology can handle right now. What we imagine is having an augmented reality where I don't have to, I don't have to walk around like this in any way, shape, or form. Because if you think it's distracting having a Google Glass on you, imagine having to look at someone who is right. kind of like doing this all the time as they're walking around.
Yeah,
I really think that AR and VR, it really is almost on the same sort of transient line as self-driving cars, autonomous vehicles, where you can get a really good demo together. You can get a lot of really obvious ways in which it would be cool, but then actually translating it to something you can actually make and sell and that people actually want to use, that's the 5% of the problem that's going to take you 300% of your resources to solve.
Do you think some of this comes from the fact that they've built now a phone that has basically supercomputing capabilities? And yet, it's just mostly playing Pokemon Go or sending messages.
I think that Apple is
We did a lot of crazy things when technology first came. I mean, you know, having Mac Paint or, you know, things like that where you draw little little things and you look what that's turned into.
AR Apple's 21st century fat bits?
Well, I think, you know, like Aaron said, when you look at AR and the things that are possible, maybe not right now, but look ahead and see what could be possible. That's going to be a pretty exciting thing. And it's in the real world. I mean, virtual reality, you know, you lock yourself in a virtual world and you're basically by yourself. Yeah. I think AR is most certainly the future.
Yeah. AR is about a whole lot more than gaming. VR, I mean, I guess could VR be, but AR really is about user as a new user interface. And I think it makes sense for Apple to think about it. BuzzFeed lists a bunch of moves over the last few years by Apple. In 2013, they bought PrimeSense. That was the Israeli company that did the Microsoft Kinect. In May 2015, it bought a German augmented reality firm, Matteo. A few months later, FaceShift. That's the company that did the real-time motion capture and used in Star Wars. This year, VR scientist Yuri Petrov was poached from Oculus. Magic Leap's Zeyu Lee. Magic Leap's the most interesting AR, kind of independent AR play right now, although Google has a fairly large stake in it. Doug Bowman, the director of the Center for Human-Computer Interaction at Virginia Tech, he was on the Virginia Tech Cube, a VR research space. And then, of course, there are lots of patents, although I think I've never really trusted patents as a way of seeing where Apple might be going. They just patent everything, as does everybody, if they're smart.
But I think you have a really interesting point about the idea that Apple needs to do things that will take advantage of the supercomputer. I mean, I have my iPhone 4, right?
what is that little thing?
This has just been declared obsolete, but it had a Retina display. Right. It had a front-facing camera. It had a great little CPU. As long as we're not doing supercomputer-type stuff, this is pretty much sufficient for the task. And so Apple, to get back into growth mode, really needs to find ways where it can play to its strengths.
Right.
And AR is a natural thing to pursue.
Yeah,
I think the question, though, is how long would it take Apple to develop AR to the point where it is one of those big selling points? And how we all know that Apple will not release something until they can actually do something with it.
Yeah.
And they've skipped technologies altogether. You know, so I think that's a big question now. Where are they and how long will it be?
I'm still bullish on augmented reality. I think that maybe 2017 will be the year of augmented reality. Maybe not. So Apple had, what, three events this year. They had WWDC. They had the September iPhone event. And then they announced the new MacBook Pros in October. I couldn't be here for that event. But I was listening in when the DJ, well, and Andy and Jason Howell and Megan Maroney, and they were kind of making fun of it. Watch.
You might know Rap DJ on iOS.
Nice.
It won an Apple Design Award, and it's used by millions of DJs around the world. I've been a DJ for almost 20 years, and I've gone from turntables and vinyl all the way to digital. The MacBook Pro is the standard for professional DJs, and we use dedicated controllers when we perform live on stage.
Well, 74% more oops.
That touch bar would make a good crossfader.
And dynamic controls, the touch bar enables the next generation in DJ software. Let's dive right in. On the touch bar, you have access to the core functionality of DJ Pro. Here is the sampler.
We could indicate that the audience should raise their arms up in the air like they just don't care or not. But now I can graduate, saying sort of put them up like you could do it, you could not. You're not really committed, but you're going to go along with it.
Using multi-touch, I can simultaneously apply a filter.
Yeah, it's nice.
Now let's zoom into the waveform.
Drop it like it's hot, drop it like it's lukewarm, drop it like it's cool or cold.
And I can precisely find a cue point to start my song.
Although it does seem like there's a little bit of a lag there. But that could be part of the software.
Okay, now we're ready to perform entirely with the touch bar. Let's take it for a spin.
No pressure.
They haven't mentioned haptics.
Haptics. I mean, haptics would make that would take it to at least another level, especially in things like this, because you don't necessarily know when, like at least from a musical perspective, timing is everything. And if you have that haptic kind of kick, that gives you an extra layer to kind of know that you're on beat, let's say, versus just this like this tap on the screen that may or may not represent what you expect it to represent when you hear it through the speakers, you know.
Also, we've seen how well haptics works on the new iPhone. Just when you're scrolling and say, oh, by the way, you've reached the end of the scroll and now you've bounced back.
Right.
Hip hop, you don't stop rocking to the bang bang boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are going to try to move your feet.
Andy, I don't know why they don't invite you to these events.
I just thought he was sampling Andy Anako in his song, to be honest.
Why aren't people in that room dancing? Cut to the back where people just go, woo!
I've used a lot of touch surfaces for music control. And like when I'm watching this and thinking about that tiny little strip in this regard, again, like I said a couple of minutes ago, I'd rather have it than not have it. But having it, I don't, until I get to play with it, I'm not entirely sure that's going to give me exactly what I would need out of that. You know, it would have to work really well for me to continue using it like
right
that.
On the touch bar. It's a revolutionary tool for DJs. An update to DJ Pro is coming later this year, and we absolutely can't wait for you to check it out. Thank you.
Andy really is good at that Sugar Hill Gang. He can actually do that whole Rapper's Delight song, beginning to end. And he will do it at the drop of a hat, so please, whatever you do, don't ask him. I think the big question of the year, as we went through the year, to me, and it's a question we actually are still dealing with, is where Apple's going with the Macintosh. And I think there's some reasonable thought that they're abandoning their pro users. Here's our discussion.
What I find myself now looking at is that I really, you know, and what I talked to a little bit before the commercial break, is I really wish Apple would just release the Mac OS and let us run it on any hardware and stop worrying about it. I don't think
that
they're making hardware.
Yeah.
I don't think they're making hardware for professionals anymore. I don't think that the Mac Pro
is. So let's get down to it, because that's really what this conversation is. And I led off with Microsoft just showing that they're at least eyeballing that market and trying to make something that might get that market excited with the Surface Studio. But really where this conversation begins is with the Apple event. And we've all been watching with interest to see, you know, for some commitment from Apple to the Macintoshes. You know, we've talked about how they haven't been updated much, but then we've also pointed out that Intel hasn't really given us a reason. There are new GPUs out there and so forth. And now they've announced laptops where it looks to some, and you can, you know, you can go back and forth on this, that Apple has prioritized thin and light and battery life over power.
If I hear thin and light one more time from that thing,
well,
I'm
and for
like,
instance, Apple said we're not going to put more than make more than 16 gigs of RAM available because we want to save battery life. So a pro will look at that, right, and say, well, that's not. I mean, I've heard you say I had a 32 gig Mac Pro, and you said, well, that's about the minimum.
Right. Well,
you know, if you're using Photoshop, it's very memory hungry. I presume that Final Cut is as well.
Well, I believe that some of the restrictions, and I can't remember where I read this, where I was looking through some articles, that some of that might be some esoteric, but restrictions of the FAA related to checking 100 watt hour max and I don't know if that's true or not.
Well,
but
Phil Schiller sent a note to a Mac Rumors reader saying, thank you for the email. It's a good question. To put more than 16 gigs of fast RAM in a notebook design at this time would require a memory system that consumes much more power
and wouldn't be efficient enough for a notebook. I hope you check out this new generation MacBook Pro. It really is an incredible system. Maybe there are other reasons, but I mean, Schiller himself said it was about battery life.
It's complicated because there's over that 100 watt hours. So they want a certain, like for instance, if they did all of that, they're still stuck with the same size battery. And so you end up with, it lasting for an hour and a half if it's not plugged in. And then,
oh, I see what you're saying. So if they were going to put more RAM in it, they'd want to put a bigger battery, and then they would run up against.
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated. So what happens is Intel Skylake still does not support the low power version of DDR4 RAM. That's been pushed to Kaby Lake, and maybe it won't land in Kaby Lake. Maybe it'll go to Coffee Cake, sorry, Coffee Lake, or Cannon Lake even. So in order to use low power RAM, Apple is limited to 16 gigabytes. They can do what some other companies have done, and that is use a different chipset that allows you to put in more RAM, but then you don't get the low power version anymore, and you get what Alex said, you get 2 hours of battery life. And it's a real restriction, the battery. You cannot literally ship it to customers, or customers cannot take it on airplanes if that battery goes over a certain size. It's why the iPad Pro filled up the case with speakers and not battery, even though people just put more battery in. It becomes illegal at a certain size and a certain cell density to put more battery in. So the thinner and lighter is sort of Apple. Lying is the wrong word. By choosing the parts that they chose, they are constrained to a certain size. They can't make the computer bigger. So the casing gets to shrink because all the other components have shrunk, because that's what technology does over time. So they can literally put the case in the dryer for a while and it ends up being smaller. But the smaller is not a design goal. The smaller and lighter is a result of them being on Skylake, having this memory limitation, having this power envelope that they want, the thermal envelope that they have, and the power levels they want to meet. And then all of those parts come together and they basically wrap it up in a shiny aluminum coating. So it is an absolute limit of technology given the choice that Apple wants to make, or their unwillingness to make a giant desktop version of a laptop.
Well, or a slightly thicker version of a desktop.
It doesn't work either.
Remember how they just a month ago they were saying, it's so hard. We have so little space. If only we had more space to put all kinds of wonderful things in these things.
But that's a tiny phone. The phone has no battery constraint.
But I'm saying that a laptop, you could put you could make it a larger case, even if you are constrained by what you can do with battery size. You can still make it really one of the best high end laptops you can possibly can in terms of convenience and feature. They wanted to make it 3 millimeters thinner.
It would be a bigger case that is still empty because the components would be the same size inside it.
You could fill it with a decent keyboard. You could fill
That's
it
true.
With an SD card slot. You could fill
true.
It with all kinds of other things. It wouldn't be filled with air.
And I know that we're obsessed with these USB, USB-C, but limiting us to only those just means that I just have a whole bunch of other things that I now have to have in my bag just to connect to it. I still look back at when Andy said that we would miss the Ethernet, and I think of that, every day, because I hook on an Ethernet cable up to my computer every day. And we're talking about pro users. So the thing is we're not talking about, I get it to have one or two USB-Cs in a consumer laptop, in the MacBook or whatever. But when you're talking about pros, we're going to hook peripherals in, and we're going to be on the road where a MagSafe is really an important piece of material for us. I mean, I'm now looking back to the years where my computer got yanked off of, I'm looking at this USB-C as power and considering the years that I had my computers yanked off my desk, had the pins bent, broken, all of those things had gone away with the MagSafe for a long time. And Apple chose to, take that out, which was, I almost want someone to build a case with a battery that goes around my MacBook, a MacBook Pro that builds me a flush maglev. MagSafe.
like a lunch tray size Mophie.
Yeah, right.
Yes. But there are with all due respect, Alex, there are more fundamental issues. The lack of more than 16 gigs of RAM. It's DDR3, not DDR4 RAM. We're now learning the details of the Radeon that is in there, the Polaris architecture. Very unimpressive compared. I guess the real point, and a lot of people are saying, is I can buy a PC laptop for half the price with twice the power. And Apple, because they're the only people that make this thing, Apple's really turning its back on the power user.
But here's the thing. I mean, and Alex can certainly talk to this more. It feels to me as though the laptop is never going to be your main machine.
that
it is, you know, my name you're,
machine. Oh, there, it, well, is.
There's,
it is.
But there's always
for a lot of people.
Well, you've got, well, and I think that's what Apple's proposing is that or your iPad Pro. No, but
they're also saying that a power user is changing. Like Jonathan Zdarsky was very vocal on Twitter saying, I'm a power user. I don't do any video, but you can't not call me a power user. And I love this, or I don't know if he said love it, but he really liked it. There's, based on at least the responses I'm getting, there is a huge gulf now in what we determine as a power user. Video professionals absolutely hate this machine. They hate the RAM limits. They hate the interconnects. They hate everything, all the choices made in here. But there is this huge other swap of people who also self-identify as professionals. Yeah, even some of them who do photography. Not all photographers, but developers and people in design industries and all sorts of other areas who absolutely consider themselves pros and are thrilled to have modern high-speed connects on this thing. They're thrilled to have a P3 display and are thrilled to have the things that Apple is focusing on. So I think it's also dangerous when you just lump all power users into one big bucket.
Alex, I'm sorry. Adam, you're about
talking like the 4K. You know, you're talking about the Retina, the 5K Retina iMac. I mean, that's a 4 gigahertz Intel quad core i7, and that's on mine, which was the original one. I don't know what the current speeds are. It's gonna be a lot faster. It's gonna have a better screen. There's just no question about that. And so the laptops, yeah, they're fine machines, don't get me wrong, but they're just never gonna match up to the desktops.
It's like there are a lot of people that I can't afford to have a top of the line MacBook and a top of the line iMac. Okay, this is going to be my. It's very correct to say that you can't really define one person, one type of person as a professional user. There are a lot of people for whom this is going to be the hub of my entire life. Whether you're working in an office or you're self-employed, you're a writer, you're a photographer, whatever. I think that something that gets thrown under the bus is people who don't necessarily want extreme high power, but they want convenience. They don't want to have to travel with a increasingly big bag full of dongles and attachments. They want to have a comfortable keyboard or even a decent keyboard to work with. That saving 3 millimeters off the thickness of a device adds nothing to the power of the device. And once again, we just butt heads with the situation that if this were Dell who decided to make these changes, okay, well, if that's too bad, I guess I'll take a look at Lenovo. I'll take a look at what Microsoft is doing. With Apple, it becomes, is this the machine that I – do I need a machine of this class? Yes. Or is there a platform-wide limitation that I can't work around? No. Yes, there is. So I guess that you're kind of screwed out of having a mobile Macintosh for the entire future.
And I feel so much better than the previous MacBook. I mean, the 12-inch MacBook was a disaster that way.
USB-C port compared to four
Thunderbolt ports.
The 12-inch MacBook had an advantage in that it was designed to be smaller. It was designed to be lighter. It was for people who wanted to make that vote, for people who were frustrated maybe that, gee, I really wish there was something even lighter than I envy somewhat some of the Windows ultralights that are more powerful than a MacBook Air, have the higher density screen, have a touchscreen, have all these really nice creature comforts, but are super, super light. And if you didn't like it, that's no problem because there's still MacBook Airs. There are still MacBook Nothings. Excuse me. There's still MacBook Pros out there for you.
I don't think the complaint is about the Macs that they're offering. The complaint is that there isn't one more Mac that's a no-compromise MacBook.
Well, they made a lower SKU version that took out all the – like you could get one with less ports and you could get one without the Magic Bar, but you can't get one on top of the 15 inches that says, hey, we're giving you a couple extra ports. We're giving you a better graphics option. Yeah, there's less battery life, but if you keep it plugged in at your desk most of the time or plugged in at work most of the time and you don't care, you have this offering. And that to me is the harder part. Like the dongles I don't really care about. The MacBook helped me get rid of those. I'll keep dongles for a year. And I was looking after this event because I was furious about the ports and the lack of dongles. And I realized I had the MagSafe 1 to MagSafe 2 adapter, the Ethernet adapter that I had to then change from this kind of Ethernet adapter to that. And I'd stopped using them. And it's easy to stop using a dongle. It is impossible to take an old connector on a computer and make it a new connector.
If you just bought a new iPhone 7, you can't connect it to your MacBook Pro.
I mean, I haven't connected my iPhone.
And frankly, you have to have two pairs of headphones now.
Good for you, Renee.
Yeah, but lots of other people do. And now you need two kinds of headphones because the headphones that work, I mean, it's as if, I don't know, it seems like they could have done one more.
I'm just looking at my desk here.
So there's a scheduling snap.
I don't even use headphones and I've got four pairs sitting on my desk. I mean,
there's absolutely, and there was a scheduling snafu here because this MacBook was supposed to be out before that iPhone. So that I, those, okay. headphones would not exist in the world where this thing actually shipped on time.
Okay.
And they and there is the Lightning USB-C cable.
There's no doubt you have dongles that can make it work with everything. But
it's a different cable. I mean, you know, you're paying $3,000 for a laptop. Well, $2,000 for a laptop.
Yeah. It's not the money. It is that, you know, I spend a lot. I mean, I do 250,000 miles a year on the road. And the thing is that for me, it's all about, I can't go somewhere now and get a connector that's going to work. You know, like with a regular USB, for instance, you know, now I got to figure that out. If I lost something, forgot something. And then again, the number one reason I don't travel, I got a 12-inch, you know, little MacBook or whatever. And the number one reason I stopped using it was because I didn't have a MagSafe. Like when I'm traveling, it is getting, my computers are sitting on my lap. They're getting pulled. They're getting pushed. They're whatever. And I was just like, I was sure I was going to break it. I was going to break it, you know, and when you're used to a MagSafe, I mean, it is one of the best things that Apple ever created. And to take it out of the laptop line is literally, you know, I'm kind of mystified by that. You know, because it is the thing when you're as a road warrior, it is the thing that you know, people kick it out all the time. And you just, you're always plugging it back in going, oh, I'm really glad that wasn't a hard connection, you know, yeah, to my computer. And especially the way these things are built, where they're basically not really fixable if they break. so they're, you know, those kinds of things are going to be lethal, you know, and you know, we have a lot of them, you know, so I have, you know, it's not just that I have a MacBook Pro, I have 40 of them, you know, like we in the company. And so we have to decide when and how we're going to upgrade those and, you know, and so on and so forth. And I don't know, I literally don't know how I'm going to manage that process. You know, we'll do it begrudgingly at some point, but it's, you know, I'm just sure that I'm in half of them are going
to
get
messed up. I accept that Apple can't make a computer for everybody. It can't even make one computer for the five of us.
Yes.
So I understand that, but I'm not even complaining because frankly, the MacBook Pro is fine for me, but I do see a lot of people saying, we wish there were more power. He's on the space station. Oh my gosh. Say hi to Commander Kelly.
Oh, well played.
Okay. Now you have to download the video. He's floating in space. You do weightless very well, Alex.
Actually, no, that's not quite what I see. I usually see them like, you see a shot like this, more like
Alex, Andy, yeah. Oh, you got the $300 book.
Serenity picked up the smaller one, and she did a great set of photos and videos that we'll be putting up. But I got the bigger one just because I was silly, and wow, is it big.
Yeah.
And huge.
A good gift for somebody who really likes Apple stuff.
A reading from the Book of Jobs, chapter 3. Versus iPhone 3S to iPhone 5.
Woo, love.
And yay, the headphone jack did offend thee, and so did the Johnny pluck it out.
Actually, now that I notice, you have three penguins in view at least. Are you a penguin fanatic?
I can see at least five.
What?
Six?
What? Oh, four? And
you can't see the poster behind me?
No, I see five. Is that light switch a penguin?
Light switches are penguins.
Holy camoli. This is a good game we could play. I spy with my little eye a flightless bird.
But yes, also a word out here to Bruno, who has been exceptionally well-behaved this afternoon.
Thank you. And he's a beautiful... Is he an African? What is he?
He's an African gray.
Beautiful color. Look at that. Mm. And somebody in the chat room said, Rich looks like the kind of guy who kisses his parrot. Yes, he is.
Oh. Anyway, the only time I have to deal with Skype is this show. Not that I'm bitter. I just let you know how much I love you guys.
Well,
for me to deal with it.
This is why it's such a good timing that I'm here in the studio, because if I were back in Boston, mm-hmm, I couldn't do this right now.
I love doing Mac Break Weekly. I'll tell you, I know sometimes people think I'm not an Apple fan. I am. I got an Apple Watch. I got an iPhone. I got Macintoshes all over the place. I've been a Macintosh lover since I bought my first one in the first 100 days in 1984. And watch with great interest, easily the most interesting company in technology, Apple Computers. Easily. So I have a feeling we'll have a lot more to watch in 2017, and I hope you will do it with us right here. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, me, and our many guests, every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC for Mac Break Weekly. Stop by and watch, will you? If not, you can always download. And I hope you have a wonderful 2017. Thanks for joining us on our best of episode. Thanks to Karsten Bonney, our producer, for putting it together, and our editors. I don't know who did the editing on this. Brian Burnett? Brian is doing all of these best ofs, I think, and he did a really bang up job. And thank you for all your suggestions. It helped us put this together. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you in 2017. Bye bye. Oh, I guess I should say, now it's time to get back to work. Are you really working? Because break time is over. Bye-bye.